and the wall opens up and I'm standing on a kind of plateau, really tiny, so high up in the sky that I said, like, I froze. And I said to the guys, like, I know that I'm in a space where I cannot fall down. I just cannot move. I just can't move. And they had thought about that for people who would play the game. It's like, oh, we can put up a fence around it that you feel more secure. And all of a sudden, like, boom.
Welcome to Conversation Bridger Bridger. This is a podcast where I sit down with top entrepreneurs, innovators, designers, and thought leaders, and I do my very best to unpack actionable, valuable insights for you to build better brands and more sustainable products. Most important, to have fun doing so. My name is Roberto Indebitzin. I'm the founder of Reframe Design, a design studio based here in Zurich, Switzerland. So today we are joined by Marco Stridwin. He is in the US, in Santa Monica, but I hope you can tell us more of your upcoming, who you are, what you do, and what's your passion.
First of all, these are exciting times, right? I mean, like where we live now. And if I see what's happening in the world as we speak, right? I mean, there's a whole journey for me to come as being born and raised just outside Amsterdam. So I'm Dutch. In 2007, I came to the States and I'm living here now for almost, you know, about 15 years. And it's an interesting journey. I started in advertising in Amsterdam. I pivoted a little bit more to the media side, and I've always worked with big organizations, BBDO in Amsterdam. But the media side and working with creatives was basically the passion, followed by digital. Now that brought me ultimately to the United States. I always have seen it that nothing in terms of from a cultural perspective. I think the culture in Holland is, or Europe, is still better than the cultures over here, even more today, obviously. Right. But I think the beauty of, instead of staying my whole life in Amsterdam and not moving, I could probably have a very happy life, but I'm a kind of type who's looking for a journey and looking for a little bit ambitious, playing in the Champions League of advertising and digital and entertainment. And Los Angeles is the capital of the world. So I was fortunate that I had an opportunity in 2007 after I opened up a media agency for the largest independent Horizon Media in the United States. And my journey started with sitting with creatives, was invited a lot by the creatives who were working on campaigns. And then obviously, you know, you have that center idea of a campaign, the concept, and you know, literally the stickies were on the wall and they would invite me in their room as being the creative media guy. And they invited me to say, well, take a look at this concept. What do you think? How can we make that bigger? You know, like in those days, it was very obvious that you would use a 30-second TV commercial and it probably would translate into a billboard or, you know, like a print campaign, maybe some radio. But there are also what we could probably call now experiential or grassroots kind of ways to make it bigger and better to reach the right audience in a, you know, let's say meaningful and wow kind of way. And that was a great, you know, like a start of my career working with creatives. And because of that approach and because of that, those lessons, when I started working with an American company who were very traditional in the times that I started, ultimately that led them asking me to come to New York and say, copy paste what you're doing in Holland, what you're doing in Europe. And I was, I had nice clients. I had Converse Europe and Footlock Europe as clients. And, you know, those clients lead themselves as well for being creative in the media approach, because they're a little bit, you know, like risk takers, street kind of stuff. And it might have been different in working, although I've worked for ING Bank and Rabobank, you might be familiar with, you know, ABN Epic banks. And I worked actually on all three of those accounts, but it was less being, let's say, risk taking. It was less and more more traditional in their approach.
You are not really traditional in your approach. You try to smash barriers. And
I mean, it is not like that. It's not like that. And let's say I think that you have to take the risk, but I think you should challenge yourself as a brand or as an individual. You know, I think you should challenge yourself always in finding the latest and the greatest. Fast forward, we're in the times where we're living now. I mean, what happens obviously in the metaverse is, I think, super exciting. And you have to educate yourself and you have to educate your clients. if it comes to what does it mean if you are a fashion brand to design for the metaverse. You know, that's a whole new way of thinking. How can you envision already that you have people or your virtual identity is having a closet in the virtual world where I can pick my hat, which is a different one that I would ever wear in the real world. But in the virtual world, I can dress up in a certain way, have my own wardrobe there, which I can, you know, trade if I want, which I can buy designer clothes made by designers who only design for online.
That's true. But how do you choose to follow that trend or to see that trend and go all in? Because in this case, it's not something new. I mean, the metaverse, there was, I think it was 10 years ago, there was Second Life, and it was kind of like the same, or the idea behind it was very interesting, and it didn't catch on. So how are you assessing that one and not another one and just going full in and also educating the client?
Yeah, that's a great
question. Give me some confidence that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, there are always trends, right? There are always things happening. And I think being on the, let's say, brand marketing, advertising, media side of the table compared to, you know, brands and clients, there should be this natural curiosity about new things and trends, what's going on in general, right? I mean, like that can go if you're a designer, right? I mean, that can go in color use or materials, fabric use, if it comes to fashion. But I think I've always been open-minded and curious when people would approach me and say, hey, I've got something new. And let's say I'm trying to give, maybe in the days that Snapchat started originally, I'm not sure if you remember, but I would say that's probably around 2012, 13, maybe something like that. I would say almost 10 years ago. And I remember Adidas was one of my clients and Red Bull was one of my clients here in the US. And as a media person, you always have those invitations that a new thing, you know, is calling you, sending you an email and say like, hey, can we give a presentation to your team? We have this really cool new technology. What do you guys think? You know, like, and there are opportunities for one of your clients to be part of that and build a campaign around. Well, I mean, you can do two things, right? You can, and a lot of people are doing that. I'm too busy. It's new. I don't know. I'm just working on my daily work, and you know, like I keep on going. I'm busy enough with my client. I forced the people on my team, forced in a good way. I forced the people on my team to be open-minded and never shut down an opportunity. I mean, like, you can still ask them, send me something, let me take a look. If that looks interesting, invite them over. And, you know, this was all pre-COVID and pre-Zoom. Okay. invite them over, you know.
And in real time with real coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Invite them over and listen, you know, and see what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're presenting their 6 seconds piece of, you know, a commercial, which you could create 6 seconds, and then it would disappear after you would have sent it out. And it was really hard. I loved it in terms of, you know, a new opportunity and a funky way of doing things for a brand. And I couldn't get it sold to Adidas or Red Bull. They thought like, what is this? You know, like they didn't want to go. Well, and then I don't know, 2 years later, right, the thing exploded and it was like, oh my God, you know, like we missed the boat.
You're like Marcus.
So yeah, I mean, I think it is a kind of way to, first of all, I think, you know, to keep on top of all those kind of things is reading a lot, watching a lot, going to events and insert yourself in cultures, surround yourself with people and go to certain things, you know.
Where did you learn all of this?
Yeah, like, I mean, I've always been open, you know, like when I was in the agency world, we would have, I think it was like something like how do we call it again? Almost like a speakeasy Friday, you know, like, so we would always have, I would instigate that everyone would come together and we would pop open a beer or, you know, a glass of wine at Friday afternoon. And there was either we would invite a speaker, either we would invite or assign someone and say, what was the coolest thing that happened in the last month? You know,
it's cool.
So now you start educating your team, your group. I created a very empty, simple room, you know, which mm-hmm. was like the brain room or the thinking room. And I'm making it a little bit in those days, 10 years ago, a living room, mm-hmm. right? That was not like a desk and stuff like that. You would go there. There was a, you know, like a refrigerator. And it was way before I think that those things were happening. And we would put stuff on the wall, right? And we would just look at it. And then someone would put a sticky on it and say, like, you know, like, we should talk more about this because this is interesting.
Like very natural.
Yeah. So now in a natural, organic way, you're educating yourself, staying on top of trends. And obviously in those days, there were also, you know, like, call it the research people who were providing mm-hmm. and their job was to provide you with insights. You know, that's the big advantage, obviously, you know, compared obviously. To being, if you have your own company mm-hmm. and it's just like, you know, it's a one man band. Yeah. You have to step into all of that. You have to go to events or be part of associations. I mean, like, and there are a lot of,
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
The different hats, like I mentioned before, it's like I have different hats that always branded by yours. With your head.
Yeah. And it is, and it's also that you can, let's say, by connecting and by, let's say, becoming a member of, right? And not always that has to cost money, right? I mean, like, you can volunteer. I was on the board of AIGA here in the US, and AIGA is the oldest association of graphic designers. I'm not a graphic designer at all, right? I mean, like, but they needed someone in the LA chapter. Right. And we had about a group of 600 people, I think, who were part of
that's
that.
That's a lot of people.
And AIGA would organize monthly events, and they would have a great speaker. And it could be someone in the design industry. That could be a teacher from an art school. You've met Errol Gerson, you know, as professor from right. Art Center. So, you know, he would be there, or he would have speakers. And I mean, it didn't cost me any money. I was a board member, and I was surrounding myself with 600 creative minds, 600 more or less graphic designers. That's from amazing. Students, from students to, you know, people who had their own companies or would work for big design firms. I mean, that's a great way of talk to people, see how excited people are about, and educate yourself, you know. And I was involved.
And listen, what's going on? Like being in front of the right. Of the wave, what's happening? All that, not just you here and all that. So.
Yeah, but and I think, you know, that's the same with you. You cannot be in everywhere and hop on everything, because in the meantime, you will have to work, make some money, and pay the bills. Right?
I mean,
it would be fantastic, obviously, and even more now.
Obviously.
To hop on all kind of, you know, jump on LinkedIn.
Oh, there's so much going on.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's hard to, let's say, absorb everything, you know, but I think.
I know.
But I'm getting inspired by going to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, you know, like, and those tickets are very expensive. But for me, it's a bunch of networking. Sometimes I don't even buy a ticket. I book a hotel room. I just go there, or I book an Airbnb with a bunch of friends, and we are staying with six people in a house. Yeah. And
it's an investment. So
it is, but it's like, it's nice to network. It's still, let's say, trying to answer your question about how do you get inspired? Where do you get your things from? And I think now online, sometimes you have to pay, but it's great to, you know, view things on LinkedIn and see speakers or connect with people and see their work.
Absolutely. Yes, I mean, I found that it's so refreshing, and being very curious, this has been like golden age for me.
Yeah.
So you can reach to people, or you can talk with people. You can go into the rooms where there are people talking about the topic that you are interested. Like, remember, there was this thing called Clubhouse a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Like, it exploded.
Yeah.
And it was super interesting the way that you could be reaching or listening to people. You can talk to them.
Yep.
When you were quite of the early adopters. Now I think it's going down, but those connections are super interesting.
I totally agree.
And also, like, and that's been a blessing and a curse, because there's so much going on at the moment. So especially like you are also involved in the ARA and AR business.
Yep. AR
and VR. And that's just the beginning. I mean, it's a spec what's happening now.
Yeah.
And even I use that to design as an industrial designer. So I design products in one-to-one scale, and I can show them to the client so they can actually feel or experience the product
yeah.
or the experience. before it's actually built in Prostate. And I just went through what you guys are doing, and it's just
I think what is so beautiful, you know, if I'm looking at the tools designers are using, right, to make 3D kind of models. When I opened I started my company in Amsterdam with Horizon Media. So the story, what brought me to the US was a company called Horizon Media, which was the largest, or is still the largest, independent in the US. And they had no offices in Europe. And I opened in Amsterdam their office. So I had to start from scratch. I had to find a building, you know, like where, you know, we could sit with 10 people or 15 people. And I ended up on the canals in Amsterdam finding a beautiful space, but it was a dump. So one of my friends was in art school, and he was at the Rietveld Academy, which is a high-end academy. And he was studying for architecture and stuff and product design. And he had this thing on his computer, you know, this CAD program on his computer. And we did the design. And when I say we did the design, he basically did it. But I was sitting beside him. Right. And imagine like a gallery kind of space, like long and completely like a dump. Mm-hmm. And he scanned that whole play while we're sitting there, right?
Wow.
And sitting behind his computer. And then we started changing the structures on the wall or the lighting. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we had laid out the whole interior of how we wanted to have the space and the materials, right? And right. It was fascinating to then hire someone, you know, a construction guy who all did that in a month or whatever. And I remember so well that I walked in the first time that everything was finished and done. That is really interesting to see that you walk into a space which I've seen before, but only on the computer, right? I mean, like, and I think that was for me in 2002. So that's 20 years ago. It was 2002. The moment of like, oh wow, I've been in this space before, you know, like it's
right. Yeah, so people like, you see that the people experience for the first time a VR experience. It's ridiculous what's happening. People are screaming, people falling off, and they are so submerged. Even the quality of the product is not perfect at all.
Yeah.
But what the mind does.
You're so right. I was helping out, still helping out in the gaming industry. There's a Dutch company called the Active Esports Arena. And they're very early stage, and they wanted to come to the States. The States is important for them. So they came ultimately, I would say like 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And it was the first time after already working with them since 2019, but that was all mid-COVID, when COVID started. Right. I've never played the game. So I'd never had the goggles on and was geared up. Totally. Right. So I put on all my gear with all sensors, right? Motion sensors, put up all my gear. And there were four squares, basically. See it almost the size of a volleyball field, you know, like, and there are four squares with four players. And the moment I put up my headset and walked to my mark where I had to stand, and I'm standing in a, let's say, on concrete in an open space, right? I mean, like, I know where I am.
Something.
I put that thing on, and there's a wall, and the wall opens up, and I'm standing on a kind of plateau, really tiny, so high up in the sky that I said, like, I froze, and I said to the guys, like, I know that I'm in a space where I cannot fall down. I just cannot move. I just can't move. And they had thought about that for people who would play the game. It's like, oh, we can put up a fence around it that you feel more secure. And all of a sudden, like, boom.
That's amazing. Just it's ridiculous in a way.
That's what you're saying. Like, it's the mind. It's the mind.
Right. We are so rational human beings, but that kind of stuff, it just messes up with us.
Yeah.
So I had this experience with my mom having the goggles on, and there is kind of like a walkthrough for Jurassic Park. And she was like looking out, and you see like the little dinosaurs and everything kind of cute and all that stuff. And she's like, oh, that's not bad. I mean, I don't know what's happening here. And suddenly you see like the animal just moving. You see like the T-Rex just moving, like putting the face in front of her. And you see her like just like really being submerged and not screaming, but really like, what's happening here? It's like taking off the glasses and just laughing. I mean, it's just
the impact. Yeah, the impact. I mean,
the impact.
Oh, it's a
fascinating. Use that for, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Are you working
on branding or brands? Yeah.
Are you working as a designer? Are you working with, you know, those kind of 3D tools a lot and trying to, let's say, have immersive kind of experiences?
Not that much, because I'm more into the product.
Yeah.
And then the client needs to get into that as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a bit challenging to tell the client, listen, let's go into that. Let's work with that before actually building a physical prototype. So we can make, let's say, 5 iterations or 10 iterations on CAD, computer and all that, and then make one a physical prototype. So I think it's also super sustainable and also super fast.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, speed counts. And I think that's where you can actually save resources, invest in that kind of technology, enhance experience, also going to the marketing part to say, we can use that for the marketing, for training the sales, for training the marketing guys, how they experience the product, the surrounding, the system, the service, whatever. And that way they can actually tell their story to the customer.
I think you're spot on. I think, you know, like, I think the beauty is what I'm seeing now in the AR, or more actually in the VR world, is that in terms of training staff, for example, right? I mean, like, I'm working with a shoe clean company, and they are, you know, that's almost like those stations, or you see slowly getting stores opening up where you can basically bring your sneakers and they clean your sneakers with, you know, like, it's almost, yeah, it's like, yeah, cleaning stations.
And not shoes, like the, you know, like the old movies, and they see like people there with paper and just clean the shoes.
But then with let's say, modern cleaning, or more modern than just the shoe polish, it will be more like, you know, like, and they clean them, and they almost look like an Apple store, right? But you bring your Nikes there or any brand, and they clean them. And, you know, there's a certain training to do those kind of things. And by just creating a video of that, you know, like, and almost like having it immersive and having it like with a headset on, and then working with models is a very easy way to explain everything and constantly let things pop up. I was really surprised, by the way, you should look into that. L'Oreal as a cosmetic brand, how developed they are as a, let's say, tech company. I mean, like, you know, like, it's like the products what they develop and research, but even in their lab, all these people are just walking almost with eyewear, not with goggles, but eyewear. Okay. Like, you know, like fighter pilots on the inside of their visors have, let's say, maps and stuff like that. So they literally have glasses on where, let's say, a senior, whatever, developer, engineer is looking with them what they are doing with their hands and virtually, and they just pop up screens in the air. It's like almost like if you watch a movie. It was very impressive.
Minority Report is in real.
It was very impressive how advanced they were in their stuff and in their product line and product development. And I was like, wow, I've never seen something like that. Yeah.
Wow. Well, there's so much we can talk. I mean, I want to be respectful of your time. Since you said
that's half fine,
hour.
That's amazing. That's fine. Maybe do you have one more question you think would be interesting to answer on my side?
Yeah. So I mean, you can make it short. I mean, it's quite. You can make it a big answer. But so, what do you believe that others don't?
What do I believe?
I mean, you don't have to go very deep. I mean,
no. I'm just quickly thinking. What do I believe and others don't? I think, you know, like, in general, I would answer that there are always non-believers, right? I mean, like, versus believe in something. And I think answering that would be more like, almost like, as a human being, like, it will probably tell who you are as a person and your character and your mindset, right? Can you believe that you can accomplish something, or are you like, I'm not even going to try it, I will never make it, right? I mean, like, so when you ask me, like, what do you believe, what others don't believe, is that I think that I believe that I can do stuff and set my mind to it.
That's great.
And I will try and go and try to accomplish my things that are making me happy, or making me better, or making, or challenging, you know, but challenging means that you have to figure it out in a certain way. So, yeah, that's what I believe.
Yeah, because that's amazing. No, it's great. And I think a lot of people can take a look at that and question themselves if they are believers or not believers.
Yeah. Be a believer. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, Roberto.
Well, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Great seeing you. I'm going to put all the things about you on the show notes and hope people can reach out to you.
Please do. If people watch this, feel free to reach out to me.
All right.
Cool. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Greetings.
Thanks, Marcus.
Bye.
At Conversations with Roberto, we believe we can build better brands, experiences, and products by having conversations and learnings from experts and leaders in their fields. Send this episode to a friend or friends that need those insights and frameworks. And feel free to rate us and review us on your favorite platform. Thank you for listening to Conversations with Roberto.
Bye.